Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip.
It was Christmas in prison, and the food was real good. We had turkey and pistols carved out of wood. And I dream of her always, even when I don't dream. Her name's on my tongue, and her blood's in my stream. Wait a while, eternity. Old Mother Nature's got nothing on me. Come to me, run to me, come to me now. We're rooting, my sweetheart. We're flowing by God.
I'm Glenn Moberg, and today on Route 51, we embrace the Christmas season with a show on faith and the criminal justice system. The holiday season can be hard on people. The stress, the crowds, the financial concerns. But imagine what it's like to spend Christmas in prison, away from friends and family, isolated, with nothing to think about except the four walls around you and those red marks on the calendar. Our guests on Route 51 today, Ray Slatton, the Marathon County Jail Chaplain and Director of Greater Wausau Christian Services, a group that ministers to the needs of inmates. And we've got two of the volunteers that work with Ray, Sally Cinto Reinertsen and Rita Jurakovic. Today, Route 51 focuses on faith and our jail inmates in a country that incarcerates a greater percentage of its population than any other nation on earth. That was John Prine performing his waltz, Christmas in Prison. Faith in the criminal justice system is our focus on Route 51 today. We'd like to hear from you. Maybe you know someone who's been in trouble or ended up behind bars or came close to it. How did they turn things around? Did they find a mentor or somebody who reached out and cared? Maybe you've been there yourself. What part has faith played in your life, whether you're a Christian or someone from another faith? Or if you're an atheist or an agnostic, we want to hear from you, too. What keeps you leading a moral life? Give us a call at 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. Ray Slatton and Sally Cinto Reinertsen and Rita Jurakovic, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you. Glenn. Thank you.
Glad to be here.
What is Greater Wausau Christian Services, for those who aren't familiar with the group?
Well, Greater Wausau Christian Services is a group that was formed back in around 1980. 10 congregations from the community saw a great need in the elder care facilities and in the jail and the juvenile detention facility. And so they came together with the idea of reaching those people, meeting those needs. And in 1981, Reverend Edwin Schwenke became our first chaplain. And he took and really got the ball rolling, especially in the jail ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And we had we did this show a few years ago, and we had Wendell Peterson on at the time. And Sally, you said Wendell was
yes, he was the director of Greater Wausau Christian Services when I started 8 years ago, and he implemented a lot of programs that Ray has taken and multiplied and enhanced, and he really was a go-getter and. It was a pleasure working with him, but it's even more so working with Ray.
Sally, how long have you been volunteering?
I've been volunteering since I moved to Wausau 35 years ago. I'm one of those habitual volunteers. I get my fingers into everything. And I got started in this back in 2003 when I went to lay ministry school. I am not an ordained minister. I'm a lay minister. And one of our responsibilities was to take on a project in the community. A lady from my church was doing jail ministry under Wendell Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
And so it turns out that her husband was transferred. She had to leave town. And I stepped in to take her place. And I have become extremely passionate about jail ministry since then.
I think all three of you are passionate. Rita, you've been volunteering
for 11 years. I've been volunteering, but I got interested when my friend said she was going to the jail, and I thought, oh, that sounds wonderful. I'm going to start going, too. And so I did, and that was 11 years ago. And
Now, are all three of you from the same congregation, from different congregations?
No, we're all different. No.
How does Greater Wausau Christian Services work? How many congregations are involved, Ray?
Well, we have 13 funding congregations, but we have several other people in the community that are involved through the Catholic Church, Methodist Church, Baptist Church. We have different denominations, people that are coming in, Christian Assembly. So it's just a group of people that come together. We have the 13 funding congregations that provide the resources for me to have my position and things like that. But we get so many different volunteers coming in. Zion has a great contingent of people. Sally goes to Emmanuel. Mm-hmm. And Rita, she goes to...
it used to be St. Anne's, but now it's the Polish National Church in Mosinee. If you've ever heard of that.
So, but we do get people from a wide variety of backgrounds.
And all the churches are in the greater Wausau area?
Yes.
You haven't thought of reaching out to other communities in Marathon County?
Yes,
since?
We have.
Well, we do reach out, but again, some of this is proximity to their volunteers getting involved. You know, those kind of things come into play, too. But we have reached out to a lot of different churches in the community.
Any idea how many volunteers you have?
I would say we've got at least 50. But we can always use, you know, if I could find 50 more, I could find plenty to do. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
As if you don't have enough.
Exactly. But
now, are you busy? I imagine you're busy with this year round, but I imagine the holiday season with the jail ministry is particularly a busy season for you.
Well, it is to a degree, but everything stays pretty consistent. I do get a call for special things. I think the emotional aspect of it becomes greater during this time of the year.
Right.
Because this is not a job where you just go in and flip a switch on. You're dealing with a lot of people, with a lot of emotions, a lot of loss, a lot of grief and things like that. And it seems to intensify at this time of the year. And I've noticed it even in myself that I seem to carry a little heavier load, you know, that kind of thing. So,
well, you can't help but be influenced by the people that you're dealing with on a day-to-day basis.
Well, exactly. As we're working with them, it is very difficult. Again, you have a lot of loss. There's a lot of unknown. It's kind of like, I was thinking about that early today, when you go into jail, it's kind of like you die, but your life's put on hold, you know, because you don't know all the things, how it's going to work out. But everything of your normal life stops instantly.
Yeah. You're dealing with inmates who are trying to deal with grief, with frustration, with fear. And then you bring Christmas into this, and you're exacerbating the issues that you would normally deal with in, say, March or June or whatever else. Christmas just exacerbates the issues.
And Rita, you've been doing this for 11 years. Have you seen a change in the jail population in that time? Are there more people in prison, different kinds of people?
Yes, there are more. But as far as breaking barriers, you know, we only have so much room to teach so many people, and they all don't come to breaking barriers.
Tell me what breaking barriers is.
It's a cognitive behavior course. Teaches them how to think differently. And all three of us teach breaking barriers. It is not faith-based.
It sounds like psychology.
It's not faith, no. But it also gives them the idea that they can change if they want to. The students that come in, they realize that if they want to change, they can, and we'll help them any way we can.
We provide the tools in the classroom of a 17-session class teaching different ways to think. And this course is beneficial not just for inmates, but for anybody on the street who is stymied with the way they think and who is limited with the way they think. And so breaking barriers, because inmates have a tendency to be stunted emotionally and to be stunted educationally, academically, this provides some support, some self-esteem, and some assurance that they can change their life, and we give them the tools to do that in class.
And breaking barriers, where does it come from, Ray?
Gordon Graham created this program some time ago. Now, Aleppi won't know the name, but he was a five-time felon. He was in and out of jail from the time he was about 17. His life history is quite amazing. But at one point, he received this opportunity to take some training, and obviously breaking barriers wasn't there, but as he was going through that, he started to piece this whole thing together, and he took that and turned it into breaking barriers. And he now, I mean, you can reach out to people in an amazing way, but going back to him for just a second, he was granted a full pardon. he'd made such a huge change in his life. Yes. And he, as he said, he was a down and dirty kind of criminal. He wasn't a white collar criminal. But with the work that he did, he was very successful and blessed for that.
Well, if you've been a five-time felon, I mean, obviously you're a down-and-dirty criminal.
And today, obviously, as he says, he knows how blessed he is because most places have the three strikes and you're out or you're in for life kind of a rule. So he would have been in for life.
Wendell, what do you think about that, tying judges' hands that way and saying basically if you get three strikes, and sometimes in some places that third strike doesn't have to be all that significant compared to the first two.
What you're saying with that is you're saying people are unrehabitable, that there's no rehabilitation, that if you haven't learned in three mistakes, then you're never going to learn. And we all have made mistakes more than three times. We have made mistakes over and over repeatedly. And so you're telling these people that already have poor judgment that you make three mistakes and you're done. I couldn't live with that as a hopefully sane, normal person. I couldn't live with being limited to three mistakes in one area. So I don't think that's feasible at all.
And we've got such a growing prison population, too. It seems like, having something like that in effect is just you're asking for more people and more people to go into the system, for it to get more and more expensive, for, just looking at it in terms of economic terms, it becomes more and more of a drag on society and its resources. What could we be doing with that money that we're spending on our criminal justice system?
There's so many socioeconomic indicators and factors going into that, but as far as socially speaking, we have developed into an extremely angry society. We have become a fist-pounding, in-your-face, I'm right, you're wrong society, and we are quick to take offense and quick to give offense, and that manifests itself into social attitudes, and not only that, but into certain laws and rules and regulations. And what I think of offhand is the number of people.
Sally, it sounds like some of the political debates I've been involved in.
not that I've been listening to many of those, but it takes on the social aspect in our community when people demand that people who are arrested be put in jail. And then they wonder why their taxes go up. And, there are so many organizations out there, too, of which I belong to, Naomi and Tip, which are working to provide alternatives to incarceration. But our society has become so hardline and so polarized when it comes to incarceration. And they just want to see people incarcerated, but they don't want to pay the higher tax.
Rita, looks like you've
got
something to say.
Not only that, people forget that we all make mistakes. And some of us get caught and are sent to jail and prison. But there are a lot of people that have made mistakes and don't end up there in prison. They haven't been caught.
There, but for the grace of God, go I. That's the old cliche.
Right.
Yes.
Yep.
Absolutely.
We're talking to Ray Slatton. He's the Marathon County Jail Chaplain. We also have with us Sally Cinto Reinertsen and Rita Jerikovic. All three of them work with Greater Wausau Christian Services, doing a lot of different things in central Wisconsin. But this time of the year, we're focusing on their jail ministry and dealing with inmates, dealing with people who, in the midst of this holiday season, are in prison. 1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 1-800-780-9742. What part has faith played in your life, if it's played a part? Have you ever experienced our prison system? Do you have a friend or a relative who has been incarcerated? Did they turn their lives around? Did you turn your life around? If so, how did you do it? Our phones are wide open. And if you've got any thoughts about the number of people who are incarcerated in the United States, we have a greater percentage of our population in jail right now than in any other nation in the world. We want to hear from you. The topic is wide open. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Northwind Renewable Energy in Stevens Point, adapting renewable energy and wood heat solutions to meet the needs of homes, farms, and business. Information at northwindre.com.
Our forecast for north central Wisconsin, increasing clouds tonight, an overnight low of 26. Friday, mostly cloudy with a high of 36. Chance of light snow at night with a low of 24. Saturday, mostly cloudy, a high of 34, a low of 28. Snow starts after midnight Saturday, continues into Sunday, a few inches possible with a high of 32 and a low of 18. We've got cloudy skies across north central Wisconsin right now. 36 degrees in Rhinelander, Eagle River, Land O'Lakes, and Tomahawk. 37 in Woodruff and Merrill. 38 in Antigo. 39 in Phillips and Medford, 40 in Stevens Point, 41 in Mosinee and Marshfield, 44 in Wisconsin Rapids, 43 in Wapaka and Wautoma, and 42 outside our studios in Wausau. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. Wherever you're listening, we invite you to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. We're talking about faith and the criminal justice system, the lives of inmates who are incarcerated, the number of inmates incarcerated in this country, and what it takes to turn their lives around and have them get out and become not just productive members of society, but people who find the will to live and the reason to live on their own accord. Because, Ray, that's really what it's all about, isn't it? Getting individuals to turn themselves around.
It really is. One of the things I'd like to talk about for just a quick second, too, though, is even in how, as we talk about the people in the jail, one of the first things we want to do is call them inmates. And one of the things that I'm really stressing to them is to see themselves as a person first. And that's important because I see myself only as an inmate. I may not be worth the effort that it takes to turn my life around. You know, so I'm really working hard on that to get them to really recognize themselves as that person first who has issues to work through. No doubt mm-hmm. there's issues to work through. But see that first. Even as we talk, one of the other things is, you know, we talk about dealing with. And I prefer to think of it as working with. And that mm-hmm. little difference is huge because it's how
it
we
is
come
huge,
across.
Isn't it?
It is. You know, so as we talk about these things, just the littlest of things can make a huge difference in their life. When I first started saying, how many inmates are in this room? And they start counting, they say, stop counting. There are no inmates. There are people. You know, I says, you know, you've got to start with that perspective first. And that's really started to make a huge mm-hmm. difference in how they view themselves. I've had quite a few people say, you know, until you said that, I didn't really see light at the end of the tunnel. I mm-hmm. saw myself as only the problem.
There's mm-hmm. a variation of that also. When I teach in jail, I often will wear an orange sweater, an orange shirt, and because they're in orange jumpsuits. And I do this specifically so they see that we're all equal. And you know, I want them to understand that we are all the same. We're all people, and that's how I get across to them. I wear orange, so when they're in my class, we're all wearing orange. We're all equally robed in the same color.
Mm-hmm. That's another thing. Every time I heard the word inmate today, I just cringed because I could hear Ray getting into class, and he'll say, how many inmates are there here? And then he'd say, really don't have any inmates. We are all people who have temporarily changed our address.
Let's go to the phones. We have Lee in Wisconsin Rapids. Lee, you're on Route 51 with Ray and Sally and Rita from Greater Wausau Christian Services.
Hello, everybody.
Hello,
hello
there, Lee.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment. I have an ex-son-in-law that is in that Three Strikes and Out, and he's been over in Oshkosh Penitentiary for probably over 10 years now. And, you know, my daughter married him, and he was just from the early teenager, he had a record and would con people and in and out of trouble. And everybody tried to help him from the cities to the county to the state. And, you know, he was such a con man, and my daughter tried to help him. I tried to help him. And his children, unfortunately, don't even know their father because he's been in prison. You know, they were just young, very, very young when he went into the system.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right. And whether we agree with the three strikes and rule or not, I mean, it's obviously the law that's in play right now. The only thing that I would encourage that gentleman to do is to just keep living life, you know, one day at a time and just find that help. And that speaks to the other side. Some people do not want to be helped. They think mm-hmm. life is fine the way they are. But the ones that want help are the ones that we really reach out to.
Mm-hmm.
Lee, has your son-in-law turned his life around at all, or is he still in the same straits?
Like I said, he's still in prison, and about 3-4 times a year, normally on holidays, he'll send cards to the kids on their birthdays and stuff, and they'll share it with me, and it sounds like he's just being his usual man situation, you know. So I don't think he wants help, or he doesn't, you know. He's even gone the Christian route when he was, you know, trying to get out of trouble.
The only thing I would say in a situation like that is he's just not ready yet.
Yes.
You know, we never write anybody off because right now it's just a snapshot of their life, and that's the way I look at it.
He's in his 40s, you know, and if he isn't, you know, he's probably in his mid-40s now, and like I said, his kids are grown, off in college, and I know through the grace of God he can be saved, but I just don't understand, you know, the situation. All I can do is pray for him.
Absolutely. And the other side is, you know, I'm in my 50s, and my mom's still hopeful that I'll turn out all right, too. So, you know, I mean, everything considered, again, it's just he's in his 40s. You know, sometimes it takes people a lot longer to get there, but we never give up on him. You know, right. I don't care who they are. I don't care what they've done. I still have hope that, because while they're still breathing, there's still hope.
Now, you know, it's easy to say unless you've been involved with a person like that where there's abuse involved and assault involved, and, you know, it's a really tough situation.
It gets exhausting, and you deal with that same abuse and same situation over and over. And even in the jail system, Lee, that we deal with, about 10% of the inmates just do not want to change. There's no accountability. They're users. And it sounds like your son-in-law is that type of person.
And I wouldn't say that they don't want to change. Sometimes they don't realize that they can change. They don't know the means of changing. And change is constant. And if they don't change, they're just going to be left behind. And the people that teach them have to be able to see the good in them. And I've also met some of the students, or the, not the inmates, the people in the jail that have been raised by parents that have told them, you're never going to amount to anything.
That's common.
Yes.
Lee, thanks so much for the phone call, and good luck.
One more question. Breaking barriers, is that all over the entire nation, your organization?
Actually, breaking barriers is not. There are several cognitive restructuring programs that are available, and there are a few here and there. Milwaukee area, I know, does not have it, but some of the people that have taken advantage of that are working to get it into the jail and the prison system down in that area. So, it's one of many different programs. I think it's a great program, and that's why we use it. But, no, it's not nationwide.
So it's a Wisconsin program?
No. It's across the nation, various spots. But, I mean, it's not used, you know, unilaterally across every prison.
Okay, where's their headquarters at? Go on breakingbarriers.org?
If you look up Gordon Graham Breaking Barriers, that will get you to the right location there.
Okay, very good. Well, thank you very much for all the work you're doing.
Lee, thanks for sharing
with us.
Sure. Bye now. God bless.
Thank you.
1-800-780-9742 if you'd like to join the conversation. That's 1-800-780-9742. We're talking about faith and the criminal justice system, and particularly this holiday season, this Christmas season, we're talking about jail ministry in Marathon County with three of the members of Greater Wausau Christian Services, its director, Ray Slatton, and two volunteers, Sally Cinto-Reinertsen and Rita Jurakovic. I'm Glenn Mobrick. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrick. This is Route 51, 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join the conversation on faith and the criminal justice system with Ray Slatton, Sally Cinto-Reinertsen, Rita Jurakovic of Greater Wausau Christian Services. Ray, you were talking about the ceremony at North Central Technical College.
Yeah, actually it's held at the Marathon County Jail, but what they do is NTC is there. They have a very strong presence, and part of that is because the Greater Wausau Christian Services is working with them in the past and got them involved in that. And they have a very wonderful presence there. They teach a lot of different classes. The GED program is there. They teach them money management, a variety of different things. But those people that have gone through, like the dad's coaching class that Mike Wall provides from Christian Assembly, the Breaking Barriers program, all the people in the NTC or in the that take the classes in the jail, when they've achieved certain points, about every 6 months, a wonderful program is held, a graduation ceremony, an award mm-hmm. ceremony. And it's important because the inmate, and I will use the term inmates when we're talking about them in general, the real thing that I need for them to do is to not see themselves as that inmate. So as we're talking, the inmate word is obviously fine. But going back to that, it's important for the inmates to really reward themselves and recognize the success that they've done, the achievement. Because if they treat it as nothing, then why change?
Education is so important, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
How many of the people in our prisons and our jails simply lack the skills, the reading, writing, and math skills that you need in order to get by in society?
Oh, I can't tell you how many, because before I joined Greater Washington Christian Services and Breaking Barriers, I used to teach in NTC, and so many of them could not even read, and if they could read, they could not comprehend what they were reading, and you'd have to try and teach them to do that. And it's not an easy job. Mm-hmm. I know one time I had a lady who wanted to learn how to read, and I just went through every child's book I could find to try and teach her how to read. I came there the next day, and she said, I decided I don't want to learn. So, I mean, I guess has to be an incentive for them to learn. But
generally, they just stop coming to class if they feel intimidated. And so we try and provide an environment that's non-intimidating, that's accepting.
Is this something that is across the board for I'm going to use that word again, for inmates?
Well, 75% of inmates have learning disability problems, mental illness, many things that impair their ability to interact in society. So it could be from learning disabilities to mental illness to all sorts of things, but about 75% of inmates are impaired in some manner.
What other educational outreach services do you do? How do you go about teaching somebody how to read and write and do these basic skills?
Well, I think a lot of it, NTC is doing a great job of it.
Yes.
Where they can. The only thing that we would do in our class when we have people read and things like that is if they have trouble with the words, just kind of help them, you know, sound mm-hmm. them out, stuff like that. But we don't spend a lot of time in our class on that because we really want to get the information, especially in the breaking barriers, to them. Because that is important for them to really take that information, learn how to use it, and then apply it to their lives. You know, in Bible study, a lot of times, you know, just reading and sharing and things like that. Just, again, like Sally says, creating that very welcoming environment as best we can. And it's a hard situation because there's a lot of things that are going on, a lot of dynamics, a lot of different personalities coming together, a lot of different problems that you're trying to get together in this room and then find a common purpose.
Do you find some inmates who might be open to being educated or doing some things, but they don't want the faith-based message that goes along with it? They don't want the Bible study. They, you know, they don't want to deal with that aspect in their life.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. And at that end, we're not there to push anything. You know, the Bible study is purely voluntary, and the breaking barriers, for the most part, is voluntary. You know, some people can't make the class simply because of they may have a no contact with somebody else, so they might be prevented from coming there. But we really work on just making it as inviting as possible.
The underlying message of our organization is forgiveness. And there are so many of the inmates that have never experienced that. So we get them to come to Bible study to understand that forgiveness is given to them. They just have to accept it. And, you know, we live in a world that is very mean-spirited and unforgiving and very judgmental. And so they don't feel...
And it's reinforced by all of our culture, isn't it?
Absolutely. And they feel they don't deserve to be forgiven. And, you know, we try and incorporate all sorts of things into Bible study, into classes that get that point across. You can forgive others. You can forgive yourself, too. And that will draw people in when they know that they're unconditionally accepted and that they can come to Bible study, they can come to class, and they can be themselves and be accepted. That will draw more people in, too.
Do you use any materials from other organizations, like Prison Fellowship?
Oh, yeah. I do. I don't mean to interrupt. I use Beth Moore. I use Andy Stanley. These are people that talk about situations that are common to them, how you need to look at yourself. You need to be accountable and then look how your actions affect others.
And so we've got the educational problem, which seems to be something that a lot of people who find themselves in our prisons and jails. What are some other factors? Drugs and alcohol.
Oh, goodness. Yes.
Well,
yes.
Yeah, drugs Pervasive. And alcohol, very, very big. Part of that goes back to self-esteem. What kind of a home were they raised in? How were their parents involved in drugs? I mean, you hear so many different stories. I go out to the juvenile detention facility, and you hear some of where mom and dad are doing drugs, and they get their children involved in it.
Right.
Where grandma and mom were selling drugs, and daughter's in jail for selling drugs, and guess what her daughter is going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of very negative environment and a lot of negativity that's just out there that just seems to permeate.
Education, lack of education, mm-hmm. drugs, alcohol, and
poverty.
It poverty.
Is across the board. Poverty is the common denominator. Many of these inmates, even when they're on the outside, live at or below the poverty level. And the majority of people in jail are in jail because they have no money to post bond. They cannot hire attorneys. But poverty is by far the common denominator.
I think another reason is that they lack self-esteem. When you go into the jail to teach or help anybody, you got to see good in all of them. Because they don't believe that they are, but somehow you got to get that across to them that you believe there is good in all.
You know, the question of poverty too. You don't see a lot of rich people in jail,
no,
except
you
for
don't.
Maybe Bernie Madoff and a few here and there. Why do we have such a disparity of wealth in this country? Why do we have so many people living in poverty, particularly in our inner cities? I worked for a while in Chicago, and to me it would be unconscionable and just unbelievable how many desperately poor people were all packed together in just one spot.
Yes.
In the richest nation on earth.
Yes.
And you've got, what was the statistic? I think 400 families own as much wealth as the lower 150 million people
right.
in this society.
Right.
How did America get that way?
You know, who is it who said the greatness of a nation is determined by how it treats the lowest of its members? And America fails tremendously in this aspect. We dispose of people. We push them to the side. We have done... we have literally the demographics, we adjust them so that the wealthy are in one area and the poor in the other. Until we start looking at each other as equals and deserving of equality in all manners, that's not going to change.
Didn't Jesus say something
yes,
to the effect
did. He
that
sure
as
did.
You treat the least of,
yes.
of us?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. And that's part of our, as we go into the jail, that's one of the things that we have, in the forefront is that, we're serving God's people. One of the first things that I like to do when I get the people, especially into a Bible study, is to just quote from Isaiah where it says, because you're honored and precious in my sight and because I love you. And I point out that when those words are said, that the previous chapter, you just think that God's getting ready to just squash them because they're not doing what they're supposed to. They're living lives of crime and hurt and things like that. And yet the love of God comes through and says, you know what, I love you, I care about you. And that's the message that we share.
Mm-hmm. There are times where I will, when I'm teaching ladies Bible study, I'll have a woman come in and for class, and she can't even lift her head off the desk. She is so despondent and so grief-stricken and shamed that she's in jail. And the purpose is to let them know they're loved, unconditionally loved, and without a doubt, that woman will be back next week. And that's when you can start to let God work through you and let them see they can change their lives. And one of the famous quotes that I say almost every week is when they look at me and say, well, you know where you're going. You know, you've had a good life. And I say, you know, all sinners have a future and all saints have a past. And you look at me and see me as a saint and I have a past too. And that kind of straightens them up, and they sit a little straighter, and they take notice. And I said, you're not going to be the same person in 10 years that you are right now, but you do have to make an effort to get there.
Sally, you work with a lot of women, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I also mentor, too.
What's the difference working with a woman inmate as opposed to working with a male inmate? The old cliche was that our jails or our prisons are filled with young men.
Yes, they are.
That's not the truth, though, across the board anymore. We find more and more female inmates.
Yeah. Our society, with all of its pornography and sexuality, I don't make a big enough imprint with the classes of male inmates because they are too consumed with sexuality. And I will go and teach, but I cannot mentor men because they're just consumed with the sexual issues in society.
They're trying to hit on you?
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I prefer to teach with women. I do teach men's classes.
That's
I prefer women.
Excuse me, that's where Sally and I differ. I prefer to teach the men, and she prefers to teach the women.
Now, why do you prefer to teach the men, Rita?
They just seem to listen more. I mean, they grasp. I mean, I don't see that with women. I'm sorry.
Age, Rita?
My age, not theirs.
But I also mentor women, and I will, when a female gets released, whether she's on probation or off paper, as we say, if she feels that she needs support on the outside, I do mentor female inmates.
That's one of the other things I really talk quite a bit about, too, is getting a good support system for each of the inmates, that they need people in their lives that will help them and, you know, get somebody that will hold them accountable. Because if they don't have that, I kind of liken it to a boxing match, you know, because in a boxing match, it's the fighter in the ring. It's all on them. They've got to perform. But if they don't have that corner man, they don't have that trainer, then they're kind of left on their own, and the odds of winning that fight are slim to none. And so I use that same analogy right there to get that support staff.
Ray Slanton, the director of Greater Wausau Christian Services, and two of the volunteers, Sally Cinto-Reinertsen and Rita Jurakovic. We're taking your phone calls. The subject is faith and the criminal justice system. Do you know anybody who's in jail? Maybe you've been there yourself. Maybe something happened to you and you were able to turn your life around. Has faith played an important part in your life in doing this? What about education? What about poverty? What about the other factors that we're talking about here? What about the fact that we have more people as a percentage of our population incarcerated in the United States than any other country? If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-800-780-9742. That's 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, building the local economy and strengthening the community by making local business everybody's business. More about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
Ray Slatton, let's give out some phone numbers here, which is probably something I should have done before. If you want to reach Greater Wausau Christian Services, it's 715-842-5635. That's 715-842-5635. Or you can reach them via email at grwcs@frontier.com. That's grwcs@frontier.com. Ray, we talked about the fact that you've got 13 funding congregations. Do you get support from other churches, other religious groups that maybe aren't directly affiliated with you?
We do on occasion. A lot of auxiliary groups will send some money in for various things. Some churches will send money designated for the Bibles that we buy for the inmates. They're a really nice life application study Bible. They cost us, we get them right around about $13, $14 a piece. We go through those quite a bit, so getting funding for that is always helpful. But yeah, we do have, but the 13 funding churches are our biggest source of our support that we have.
And Sally, you mentioned that you work with another organization, NAOMI, which has been involved in a lot of social justice issues in, mm-hmm. in the greater Wausau area, bringing bus service back to the metropolitan area. Talk about that for just a few seconds.
There are so many social issues that have spiritual connections and religious connections, and I honestly believe we are our brother's keeper, and we do need to take care of each other. That's where NAOMI came out of, and TIP also.
What is the other one?
TIP, Treatment Instead of Prison.
Okay, explain that to me.
It is an organization that came out of NAOMI that is... that is working, trying to work with the state to reduce the number of incarcerated by encouraging and helping organize treatment centers and passing legislation to allow it to be easier for people to get treatment. For the general public may not know this, but someone has to be incarcerated in prison for 3 years before they become eligible for in-prison treatment, drug alcohol
really?
Treatment. Yeah. That's why they, when someone
well,
has...
Well, isn't that just encouraging recidivism?
It's because there's such a backup. There's such a backup of people in prison needing treatment that it takes 3 years of incarceration before you're eligible. And so we need more treatment centers. We need far more if we're going to reduce the number of drug alcohol-related incidents. And... it's not just alcohol anymore. We've got issues with bath salts here. We've got issues with meth and heroin and LSD. And they require different types of treatment. And so we need to
It seems like treatment would be, you know, something that even if you've got somebody in prison, you've got to take care of that or the person is going to be there for a good long time.
Right. They do have treatment programs in prisons. What we're looking at is maybe some of the people that are going to prison just for the treatment, if we could set up something else that would, you know, let them stay in the community. But then again, the quality in each community is different as far as the kind of care in the treatment center that's provided. So, you know, that does become one of the issues, though.
Do inmates typically get gifts when they're in prison during the Christmas season? Or
No, it's not allowed.
It's not allowed?
No.
And we have a gift-giving program for children of inmates called Kids Count, which is our busy week is next week.
As I say, you know, it's better to give than receive. I think that if I was in prison, it would just break my heart if I couldn't give my kids something for Christmas.
Right, and that's where Kids Count comes in through Greater Wausau Christian Services. It's a program that we have had going for about 14 years, where because an inmate cannot get out and purchase gifts for their children, we do it for them. But then again, as we said previously, because they generally live at or below the poverty level, they wouldn't have the money to buy gifts for many of the children. So we do that. And that is funded completely separately from the churches. That is a individually funded
really?
Program. Yes. It's called Kids Count. We purchase gifts for the children of eligible inmates every December. Monday, we are going to be going shopping at Target. We have a list of 75 children of inmates that qualify for the program.
75 and growing.
And growing. Oh, my. I'll have a lot of shopping to do next week. And we wrap the gifts, and we call family members who may be have custody of the children or have visiting rights, and we get the gifts to them so they can distribute them to the children of inmates.
Another thing that NTC used to do was the fact that if a father had a child at home, they would let him read a story to that child, and then they would send the CD to the child.
The tape.
Yep,
the tape.
Right. Yeah. And if I could for just a second, too, I mean, you think about the 74 children that are impacted by their parent. It could be mom or dad. It could be both, you know, that are in jail. You know, that 74 people that are getting off to a rough start. You know, and that's something we need to start doing is really reaching out to the children.
And if it's the family structure that's so important, here we have an example of the process continuing.
Exactly. I had a case out at the Juvenile Detention Center a couple of years ago where this guy was on the shelter side. His case was adjudicated. He went to the secure side, and then he was supposed to get out. And I came back the week later, and he was over on the shelter side because mom and dad were both in jail.
Yes, that's very common.
Ray, give me a success story.
Well, a success story, one of the success stories I'm going to share is actually, and I hope Lee's still listening, and it may speak to that. There was a gentleman that was in prison, actually in jail here, and it was a very heinous crime against a family member. And when he first came in, in fact, this story was shared again at NTC at the ceremony, but this gentleman came in, he was very suicidal. He got involved in a dad's coaching program, ended up with Dan Cohn, my predecessor, who worked with him, was able to turn him around, and by the time he got into prison, this guy is a very strong witness for Christ. Mm-hmm. And it was just an amazing story to watch it go from one thing to the other. In fact, it was shared that at his trial, and that he admitted to more crimes than he was being charged with, because he felt that that was important to receive the forgiveness, you know, that, that he really was seeking mm-hmm. to do that.
Absolutely.
Sally, do you have an example, a success story, somebody you've worked with who has heartened you? Just give me one.
I just have a young woman that's very near and dear to my heart. And she was actually, she's listed as a sexual predator because she had sex with someone when they were younger than 18. And she became pregnant with his child. And so she was processed through our criminal justice system in this county as a sexual predator. And she had so much potential. She already had gotten through some of her schooling, and she had to give that all up to go to prison. But when she came out, you know, I worked with her. She's on the straight and narrow. She's gone to school. She's gotten her degree. She's working. She's raising two kids. And she wouldn't have gotten that without the support, as Paul would not have gotten that without your support. It's very important to provide support for people when they get out. And I'm also working with Open Door right now, which is an organization that started through St. Paul's United Church of Christ. And we're trying to get a support group going for released inmates, for people who mentor.
Rita, do you have a success story?
Well, not personally, but I remember reading a book written by a man who was in prison. His name was Bill Dallas. I don't know if I should mention his name. But he said everything that he learned or needed to learn about living life, he learned in San Quentin. It was because of how the other prisoners treated him. And they were all lifetime prisoners that took pity on him and helped him get on his feet again. And I do think sometimes the prisoners can learn from one another.
Ray, do you have anything to add? We're out of time.
No, I think just thank you for the time that you've afforded us today to be able to share this. Yeah, very nice.
Well, thank you so much. And again, we want to thank today's guests, Ray Slatton, the Marathon County Jail Chaplain and Director of the Greater Wausau Christian Services, ministering to the needs of inmates and providing one-on-one mentoring and support. Also, Sally Sinto-Reinertsen and Rita Jerichovic, two of the volunteers that work with the group. You can find out more by calling them at 715-842-5635. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer and on-air producer, Rick Ryer. Special music today by John Prine. Next week, Bill Martins will be filling in for me on Route 51. Thanks for riding along with us today. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin. And until next week, we're heading out of town.